What's up, everyone, and welcome to the weekly edition of ESG Now, where we cover how the environment, our society, and corporate governance affects and are affected by our economy. I'm your host, Mike DiSebato, and this week we are discussing the big one, the SEC's enhancement and standardization of climate-related disclosures. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Stay tuned. If you haven't heard, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has laid down a climate disclosure rule that everyone is talking about. Well, everyone has been talking about the omission of Scope 3 emissions from the rule, but really there's so much more to it than that because this rule is a beast. Its details cover close to 900 pages, and its purpose is to require companies to disclose certain climate-related information in their registration statements and annual reports, which means it's a rather big deal, and it's like a coming-out party for the SEC when it comes to climate. It's the Oscar night, the movie premiere that everyone has been waiting for after being teased with trailers about what might or might not make the final cut. So on today's episode, we're going to discuss both the rule and its real-world implications. To do that, I have with me two guests. The first is Zohir Uddin, who is part of our government and regulatory affairs team, and the second is Matthew Lee, who covers the energy sector for MSCI ESG Research. Now, when I called up Zohir to talk about the rule, he said, with the sort of joy only found in someone that works in the government and regulatory affairs team, that the journey the SEC climate rule has been on since it was first proposed 2 years ago can be compared to a film drama full of plot twists, cliffhangers, and edge-of-the-seat moments. Now, he said, we are finally here.
So March 6, 2024 was indeed opening night at the box office for the SEC, which is when they adopted their final rule on the enhancement and standardization of climate-related disclosures for investors, or the final rule for short. Now, the rule requires companies who are in scope of this SEC regulation, referred to by the SEC themselves as registrants, to disclose certain climate-related information in their annual registration statements and annual reports. Now, sticking with the Hollywood theme, among the cast of this new rule, we see some familiar faces and also some very notable absences. So included among the disclosure requirements that made the final cut, we see, for example, obligations around a company's governance, strategy, and business operations, certain information on their exposure to physical and transition climate risks, and how those companies are indeed managing those risks. We see requirements around climate-related targets, for example, and also more wider transition plans, if the company has adopted any. There's also forward-looking assessments, such as scenario analysis, again, if the company has carried this out and if the results are material. And also importantly, but certainly not least, requirements around Scope 1 and Scope 2 greenhouse gas emissions, if financially material for the company. We'll come on to Scope 3 later on.
Yes, the Scope 3 emissions decision was clearly one of the cliffhangers of the ruling, and we're going to get into that one indeed. But before that, I should note whom this regulation affects. And the answer is everyone, but in different ways. The largest companies, and these are obviously companies in the U.S., the SEC is a U.S. regulator, but the largest companies, those with more than $700 million U.S. dollars in market value, are required to submit their first disclosures for the 2025 fiscal year. Medium-sized companies, the 75 to 700 million market cap companies, they are next in the reporting pipeline and are required to submit their first disclosures for the 2026 fiscal year. And the smallest are required to submit their first disclosure for the 2027 fiscal year. So basically next year, we're going to start to see these disclosures trickle in. To what those disclosures actually are, Zohir mentioned the important ones by name. The governance, management, and board responsibility disclosure, where companies are required to disclose a description of their boards and senior management oversight of climate-related risks. The identifying and managing material climate-related risks disclosure, where companies should describe any climate-related risks that have or can materially impact their business. Now, this bit includes a description description of whether they are short-term or long-term risks, whether they are physical and transition risks, and if possible, the exact geographic location of those climate risks. Now, the physical risk part, the lawyers have been going completely mad with excitement over this one, so you better watch out for that. Now, there's the greenhouse gas emissions disclosure where large and medium-sized companies, mind you, I didn't mention small companies there, it's just large and medium-sized ones, are required to disclose their Scope 1 and Scope 2 greenhouse gas emissions, if those emissions are material, of course. And they have to disclose the underlying methodology and assumptions behind those data points. That also must be stated. Look, I'm going to stop listing things right now because, as I said, it's 900 pages. The list goes on. But what I wanted to know from Zohir was, within the details, which of the disclosures does he think is the most impactful to highlight? They're all important, sure. But within the disclosures that were included, which is he paying attention to the most?
So if I had to pick one among the list of requirements, which I think is most impactful or important, it will be certainly the requirements around transition plans and related climate targets. I think kind of transition planning, transition finance in general is fast becoming a buzzword for this year, and we're seeing it in many other jurisdictions. So the fact that the SEC has in its rule included a requirement around companies disclosing certain details around the transition plans, progress being made, baseline, year metrics, any caveats and actions that the board is taking to help meet those transition plans, I think is critical. And alongside and in conjunction with some of the other initiatives we're seeing from U.S. policymaking bodies such as the U.S. Treasury and federal agencies such as the EPA, I think that this focus on transition plan is well targeted. Some of the other requirements around Scope 1, Scope 2 greenhouse gas emissions, they were to be expected. Governance and board responsibilities, they have kind of, these are, can be seen as low-hanging fruits and already underpinned by TCFD requirements, and a lot of companies are probably already disclosing information on this. So I think the detailed requirements around transition plans and climate targets, for me personally speaking, is new. I think will go some way in terms of moving the dial and providing investors with the information they need.
Now, don't worry, when Zohir said that some companies are already disclosing on their greenhouse gas emissions, I'm sure you were thinking, well, what companies? What percentage of companies? And we're going to get into that with Matthew. But I think we want to take Zohir's point here and kind of dive into it. It's the disclosures around planning that is going to be really interesting for investors, because the data itself, that is important. And of course, I'm going to say that's important. But if climate data is as useful as it is predictive, seeing the detailed transition plans of companies disclosed in a manner that the SEC would accept is going to be really eye-opening for investors to review. And we do have some examples of what the framework of these transition plans might look like, because there are standards out there already that detail what should be included, such as the Transition Plan Task Force that was developed in the UK but has been adopted globally, or the transition plans detailed by the International Sustainability Standards Board, or the ISSB, so we can get a glimpse of how these companies might disclose to the market, since the SEC hasn't been overly prescriptive of what should be included in their climate transition plan disclosure, just that they must be disclosed. Right. So that's what has been included. What about the bits they've left out that people wanted in? Here's Zohir going into what was left on the cutting room floor.
The SEC first proposed this rule 2 years ago now in 2022, and they requested feedback through a public consultation. Now, since then, in total, they've received a really high amount of kind of feedback and comment letters, 24,000 kind of individual comment letters and responses in return. And so what we see naturally in the final rule is somewhat of a balanced compromise. And there are a number of key differences compared to the proposed rule as a result of that feedback. So I think everyone was expecting there to be some sort of watering down of the proposed rule. Now, despite the initial fanfare and excitement in some corners of the marketplace, I think we will have to wait and see if the rule does become the blockbuster hit that many anticipated it to be. And that's because the rule's attracted, it's already attracted a small amount of criticism from both sides of the aisle. So some commentators are concerned that the SEC is stepping beyond its usual regulatory remit by even considering specific climate rules, whilst others have expressed disappointment that the requirements included in the final rule don't actually go far enough and that it's been watered down too much. So I guess like any great feature-length film, there was always going to be mixed reviews from the audience. So if I focus on one of those specific points of difference, it's the elimination of the proposed scope 3 requirement in the final rule. As originally proposed in 2022, the rules would have required certain companies to disclose their scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions. However, the SEC has noted due to kind of potential burdens, such as a requirement on scope 3 could impose on companies, as well as questions about the current reliability and robustness of the data associated with scope 3. So at the end, therefore, there is no final rule, or in the final rule, there is no scope 3 emissions disclosure required for any companies.
That omission did cause a lot of murmuring in the sustainable finance circles especially. But look, it is what it is. We now, for the first time, have a set of mandatory nationwide climate disclosure requirements for companies big and small to abide by. And this brings the U.S. policy and regulatory environment close to, and in some cases level with, many of the other jurisdictions around the world where we have seen similar climate-related rules come online over the last few years. You also have to consider that this rule is more like a regulatory floor rather than a regulatory ceiling. There is a likelihood that the rule gets enhanced in future years, like, for example, adding that scope 3 emissions. We've seen the SEC do this with some of its other rules recently, and now at least the real world is going to have a floor with which to work with. And it's going to be important to see where the rule does take that real world individual, the real world company, the real world investor. Now, luckily, my next guest, Matthew Lee, has done a bit of digging into what the current disclosure rates are for U.S. companies. And so we're able to sort of show how prepared the U.S. market was for this rule that's been looming for 2 years. Here's Matthew taking you and me through it.
Yeah, I think in the big picture, this affects U.S. firms because their disclosure rates tend to lag a bit from their global peers. And so we're going to need to see some movement in terms of companies catching up, if you will, of providing these material climate-related disclosures. However, I think for a lot of first movers, a lot of U.S. companies that have taken the initiative, they won't bat too much of an eyelid here. Since a lot of the language and requirements needed do match to like an SBTI target or a CDP questionnaire or a TCFD disclosure. So perhaps there we can already see it's like a microcosm of an orderly versus disorderly transition, right? If you were more prepared, you are less hit by this type of regulation and you're able to make that transition more smoothly.
But those first movers aren't the majority of the U.S. market. Matthew found that of a representative set of global companies, around 73% have already disclosed their Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions. For U.S. companies, that number drops down to 45%. Of course, it is likely to change now that this mandatory nationwide rule is being put into place. But for some of those 55% of companies that aren't disclosing, someone is now going to be working late into the night to try to get that data out into the open at the time it's required. And as they might well do, because this SEC rule is now part of a patchwork of climate requirements that companies must respond to if they hope to be in compliance globally.
So for example, in the EU, you now have companies disclosing sustainable revenue, do no significant harm criteria. Closer to home, we also have California trying to enact a stricter set of rules than what the SEC has proposed. And so I think a company can either approach this from a more compliance angle in which they only give what they're legally required to do. And that's a pretty common approach if you think of reporting as a cost center, right? As something you can't really generate any opportunities from and something you just have to do because the law requires you to do so. Is that really true, though, right? In this day and age where capital markets products, a lot of them, are created based on benchmarks from these public disclosures.
And where those disclosures were mostly voluntary in the US, we now have everyone that is captured under the regulation putting out their data, their numbers, which means more products can be made because there's more available data that will be regularly disclosed. It's going to be a rank and choice exercise that people that call the market their home love. It could, as Matthew told me, turn the whole exercise of disclosure away from the cost center and into a golden opportunity for some companies to shine. I think that is especially true when talking about the disclosure of transition plans, because transition plans are often focused on three factors: how the company is going to decarbonize itself, how the company is going to deal with the risks and opportunities caused by climate change, and how the company is going to help the entire economy transition to a low carbon economy. Those are going to be fascinating to read for investors. I've read enough company sustainability disclosures at this point to know there's a wide breadth of quality there, and the good ones really stand out. Now that everyone who is materially impacted by this stuff and will have to disclose it, we're going to see some various shades of disclosure prowess. It's something that, to be honest, Matthew agrees with.
I do think this means in the long term for emissions numbers, we will have more precise benchmarking that we can do for industries just because we have a greater sample size. But particularly for scope three, we likely still need to rely on industry estimates or industry benchmarks, given that we may, for at least most of these US corporations, we may not still have full reporting from them. I also don't want to gloss over the other required information. I think it's pretty significant for investors. We know that climate-related risk management structures, so the governance of companies related to climate, is going to be disclosed. Is their team more of a compliance function? Does it actually have strategy input? Or is it more housed under their accounting department? Again, based on how you plan or empower your sustainability team, that really does affect how they can react and manage sustainability questions.
Right. Who will be taking home the gold statue in this SEC disclosure mandate could go down to who puts the resources into the team that is collecting the data for disclosures and reporting on it. And at the moment, it's probably the big companies, if I'm going to be honest. A lot of them have already been disclosing for a long time and they have the resources to burn. But you have to remember, as I said earlier and Zohir alluded to, this is a floor the US didn't have. And yes, California has already established the Climate Corporate Data Accountability Act and the Climate-Related Financial Risk Act, but this is a nationwide rule the SEC has introduced where there was nothing before. I should actually probably correct the analogy here, because really, this is like the US building its first movie studio and finally getting into the game. It's not yet the award ceremony, but that may soon come. And that's it for the week. I want to thank Zohir and Matthew for talking to me about the news with an ESG twist. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard, don't forget to rate and review us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to hear myself or one of the other wonderful ESG Now hosts every week. Thanks again, and talk to you soon.
The MSCI ESG Research podcast is provided by MSCI Inc. subsidiary, MSCI ESG Research, LLC, a registered investment advisor, and the Investment Advisors Act of 1940, and this recording and data mentioned herein has not been submitted to nor received approval from the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any other regulatory body. The analysis discussed should not be taken as an indication or guarantee of any future performance, analysis, forecast, or prediction. The information contained in this recording is not for reproduction in whole or in part without prior written permission from MSCI ESG Research. None of the discussion or analysis put forth in this recording constitutes an offer to buy or sell or promotional recommendation of any security, financial instrument, or product or trading strategy. Further, none of the information is intended to constitute investment advice or recommendation to make or refrain from making any kind of investment decision and may not be relied on as such. The information provided here is as is, and the user of the information assumes the entire risk of any use it may make or permit to be made of the information. Thank you.